meeting this morning for the purposes of a hearing into the 2018-19 financials of the SAPS. We welcome the National Commissioner and his team. I have received the apology of the Minister, but the accounting officer is here. Colleagues, we are meeting under very difficult circumstances, and as I've indicated, we will keep a close watch to the number of persons in this room, as the House Chairperson has requested us to limit the numbers to 40, 50, pushing it in any venue. It is precisely then for that particular reason, colleagues, that whilst there is a sitting tomorrow when we are scheduled to meet, but nonetheless we will have to postpone our meeting, which was scheduled to deal with the municipal and government debt to ESCOM, because we had cited about 8 departments to come, and already those numbers are astronomical. And these are all people in the main who will be flying down from Pretoria, and of course, so we know the risks that come with traveling. So we will have to hold that meeting in abeyance until such time that there's greater clarity on the circumstances before us, because if we continue tomorrow, we will be, in fact, probably over 100. So even the provision of the 40-50, which we are labouring under currently in Parliament, is not going to work. So we will have to find time to deal with this comment. It's not to say it's not important. I think that message needs to go out very clearly, that we are still expecting all those stakeholders, from ESCOM to COCTA, Treasury, Public Enterprise, and the Presidency, to come here and explain how they're going to structure the management of the municipal and government debt to ESCOM. It remains a priority, one which we are overtaken by events. So I think, colleagues, there's an appreciation about that reality. I think I just do want to say to us, colleagues, that the disaster that has been declared is obviously going to see diversions of funds from all sorts of government programs to fund now the national disaster. And whilst that is appreciated, I think we will also have to keep a very keen eye on those diversions and those deviations, because we know what happens in a disaster. We know what happens when there's deviations and diversions and expansions of things, because not everybody's got the collective interests of the country at heart. The corrupt elements may see an opportunity to loot, as you saw with the state funerals, a matter which we are still dealing with. So if people can steal for a funeral, there's very little that prevents them to steal from a disaster. And I think that the law enforcement agencies themselves and all the affected government departments will be receiving these funds will have to make sure that we do not create a financial corona of people actually stealing. So I think we must also keep a particular vigilance on our part on the flow and movement of those financials and those monies, so that we do not create a crisis within a crisis. It's something which I was reflecting on, because some of the things we are dealing with is that exceptional circumstances are a breeding ground for corruption. So I think we will probably just communicate that to Treasury and the relevant government departments to tighten controls. You will recall that in KwaZulu-Natal there was drought funding of about 230 million rands, and that money never saw the light of day and is sitting comfortably in pockets somewhere. So General Lebeya, we are hoping that the Hawks as well will tighten their grip on enforcement here, and we're wanting those prosecutions. So let's not have another crisis. Colleagues, all right. Gunther, there's a request that Skululi Kepisi Mntanam. Right. So, colleagues, welcome, and thank you very much for being here. We will immediately shoot through to the hearing. Generally, it's the normal procedure. One question, one response. And I'm going to request that Honorable Van Meenen will be first off the bat to deal with irregular expenditure. Because we are dealing with a qualified audit opinion here in 2018-19, which is the same for 17-18 and 16-17, and there was an increase in your irregular expenditure, and it was disclosed as 220.7 million and increased to 1.2 billion rands, and so that escalation is of concern to us. So we have gone through your annual report. We've interacted with the Auditor General extensively on it, and so the colleagues will proceed with that. Colleagues, I think the one section that we may not touch on today could be deviations and expansions, but we'll see how far we go. So General, I'll request that you introduce your team so that we know who is here, and then so that when colleagues are fielding their questions, they will be in a position to know exactly who we are dealing with. And I know that there was a bit of a confusion yesterday as to whether we are proceeding or not until the presiding officers gave direction. So one must appreciate the cooperation and patience on your side as well, because the green light was given very late, and to say we are proceeding. Right, so colleagues, are we all fine? Welcome. I think we especially welcome back Mam Zibula. We are very happy that you have made a recovery. Good to see you. The family is intact. And so, yeah, we are off the bat. National Commissioner, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity, and good morning, Honorable Members. Chair, our delegation is as follows. As I call their name, they will make an indication. The first one is Lieutenant General Libya, the National Head of Hawks. The second one is Lieutenant General B.C. Ngwenya, Deputy National Commissioner Human Resources. Lieutenant General Vuma, Deputy National Commissioner Asset and Legal. Lieutenant General Mvazi, Deputy Commissioner Crime Detection. Lieutenant General P.P. Dimbane, Chief Financial Officer. Lieutenant General Khan, Legal Services Division. Major General Mavunda, Technology Management Services. Major General Lee Reed, Acting Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain. Major General Nelson, Financial Administration. Major General C. Matlow, the new Chief Risk Officer. Mr. Wally Van Yerden from the Audit Committee. And Chair, just the less than 1 minute, I wanted to just put our apology for the amendment on the document. We realized that there's certain dates which were not talking to certain transactions, and we decided that we need to just to do the amendment and send it again. So I just wanted to apologize in advance. If we need to explain it, we can explain it later. But we made copies. Thank you.
No, colleagues, I was advised this morning that the formatting, apparently one line tripped up and then moved everything up or something. So I think it was that's the explanation I received insofar as that change is concerned. But Honorable Van Meenen we'll go through it, and so she will see how she is. So I'll hand over to her, because I think that that's her section, and then we will we'll take it from there. How long is the CF open in the position now, Commissioner?
It's 13 months, Chair, and the Chief Risk Officer, I'm sure, is 4 months.
Okay.
Is it 1 month?
1 month.
She looks so old.
Commissioner, you are walking on very dangerous ground.
No, I'm just saying, Chair, the way she demonstrates confidence in her work.
Okay, all right.
She looked like an old horse in the stable. Thank you, Chair.
Poisa. A close call there, close call. Don't dig a deeper hole. All right, colleagues, on that lighter note, let us get to the serious business of the day. And so, General and your team, which you have introduced, welcome. Honorable Van Minen, it is 22. Can I give you up until 20 past 10? Half past 10, because your section is quite extensive. Take your time and just weave through it as you deem fit, and I suppose you can sample. So we'll hand over to you, and we'll be patient, colleagues. Can we take notes of the issues as she raises them, and we will come in afterwards. All right, Honourable Famina, over to you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to everyone for being here. What I want to kick off with is the AG last week briefed us regarding the irregular expenditure and the essentially lack of sufficient evidence for the register, for the irregular expenditure register. And I just want to hear from yourselves how that situation arose, because I understand, I think it was the audit that happened for the last year then uncovered a great deal more irregular expenditure for previous years. So can we just start with that, please, General?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The CFO will explain, will respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. The explanation in regard to the concern of AG, Chairperson will recall that we have been qualified for the past 3 years on the same issue. The issue in relation to the query was that our register is not complete. It cannot be used. It cannot be relied upon. What was required from AG was that the organization must then demonstrate in terms of that particular register that all the transactions that we had entered into, it dates back from 2016, are free of irregularities. So there has been a request from AG that the department complete a 100% population of transactions that we have entered into over those years. So as a department, we have not done that. So it then tampers with the opening balance in terms of what you have disclosed on your financial statements. So they could not audit that because we did not have that evidence to say indeed our opening balance is correct. We were requested with the department to undergo that particular exercise. Since 2016, that exercise was not done. So the opening balance was unreliable. That is the concern of AG. It was the same concern last year, hence we got the qualification. And then after that, we engaged AG to say, then how do we then get out of this? You will recall that we're dealing with decentralized transactions in the police. Transactions are taking place as far as the police station. How do we then embark on that particular exercise? And then we put an audit response plan into place. We, as the police, we do not have capacity to undergo such an exercise. We then put an audit response plan where we undertook an exercise with internal audit. We had transactions from zero up to billions in terms of bits. We then put an audit response plan to say, for us to get out of this particular quagmire, we have to do that. That is expected from the AG. Internal audit was then tasked to undertake this exercise by focusing on transactions below 300,000. Those will be your transactions at police station, at provincial level, all over. Then we appointed an external service provider to then assist us to deal with the transactions beyond 300,000. That particular exercise is still taking place, so that then when we are done, we are able to can provide that evidence to AG to say, AG, this opening balance is reliable. So that has been the issue that has made the organization to declassify. So we are undertaking this exercise to rectify, hoping that by 1920 then we will get out of the qualification. Thank you, Chair.
May I ask what happened, why in 2016 did this whole system essentially unravel? And why has there been no proper trail since then?
There was a finding to say the department has understated its irregular expenditure. Then for us to be able to can then answer or respond to that particular finding, we needed to do that 100% population exercise, which we did not do as an organization.
Still trying to find out why the 100% population stopped happening, essentially. Why did this issue develop initially? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, Honourable Chair, I think firstly, when we did root cause analysis, there's been a number of factors. Firstly, the internal control framework was not fully in place, and we then decided to put it that is in place. But then there has been other systems that goes together with internal control, so that these exercises are monitored. There's a necessary monitoring and evaluation process that is in place. It wasn't fully in place, so we decided to put it in place with the including the enterprise risk management plan for the organization. So basically, this is what we can explain. It's mainly the internal control framework.
Can you just talk me through the internal control network and how that whole system works? In particular, at station level, if you're using a 300,000. Is it a station level that you've got a 300,000 rand cutoff, or is that provincial? And I'll just explain how that then works from station level to province up to national level.
It is in relation to the procurement delegation. The 300,000, the province can approve transaction up to 300,000. If it exceeds 300,000, it is sent to a ministry for approval. Everything above 500,000 follows the process. So it is in relation to the procurement.
I'm going to request that you speak into the mic and maybe also then use your rally voice into the mic. Yeah.
Apologies, Chair. It is in terms of the procurement delegation of the organization. The 300,000 delegation is up to the provincial level. As soon as it exceeds 300,000, it is sent to the national office for approval. Anything above 500,000, then it follows the bid process.
And at station level, what is the situation there? I mean, does it automatically go up to province, or is there also a delegation allowing approval at station level? Because if I look at some of the irregular expenditure, it clearly must be happening at that level.
There are delegations that talk to approval at station level. It depends on the level of that particular station. You'll find a station where you've got a level of a lieutenant colonel that is given a specific amount to approve. If that station does not have another level, then the transaction goes to province. So it depends in terms of the levels that are allocated to approve those particular amounts.
Okay,
and there is irregular expenditure transactions that were picked up that took place at station level.
Now, in terms of irregular transactions, one of the issues that the AG also raised was the apparent lack or delays in investigations. So I really want to unpack that. What is currently happening at management level to deal with that concern from the AG? And how are how are plans developing in order to actually follow up with those transactions to find if there, in fact, are problems with that regular expenditure?
Thank you, Chairperson. The National Commissioner spoke about internal controls. Last year, we embarked on a process of enhancing internal controls and systems throughout the organization. To this end, we established the regular expenditure committees. From National, there is an irregular expenditure committee that talks to, once that particular transaction is reported, all the processes must be followed in relation to the framework that was issued by Treasury last year. Last year, you will recall, Chairperson, that Treasury issued a new national Treasury framework on how to deal with the regular expenditure before you submit the entire transaction to Treasury for condonation. So we took the framework, we then said we are going to enhance systems of internal controls in the organization. We established the regular expenditure committee at national level. We also established the regular expenditure committees at provincial level, precisely to deal with the issue of reporting, to deal with the issue of timely investigation, to deal with the issue of discipline measures in relation to this. Because in terms of that particular framework, there are time frames. You cannot take long to investigate a transaction. So we started a process of cleanup last year from the register. We cleaned up that particular register. We established these committees for the purposes of monitoring and ensuring that there is compliance to the framework. There would be transactions that were picked up by AG during the audit that we have included. Once we have agreed and included them on the register, we then kickstart the process of appointing investigators to confirm irregularities and to deal with the process holistically in line with that particular national treasury framework. So there's a number of measures that we have put in place as an organization to ensure that we put our focus on these particular transactions. And there's monitoring and there is consequence. So we started that in our process last year. Thanks.
Maybe, Honorable Chair, I can just add to say one of the measures we put in place, I have sanctioned the establishment of a compliance board, which sits periodically just to check the level of compliance. But two, I've also issued further instructions that for any transaction, there must be financial investigation, departmental investigation in terms of the regulation, and where it warrants criminal, then there should be criminal investigation. So all three dimensions are applied to each and every transaction, and the outcome thereof determines which direction we should follow. Thank you, Chair.
Great. I just want to find out, does that refer in total to the 105 cases that were referred for investigation? Okay. Of which 39 were concluded and disciplinary steps were taken. What kind of disciplinary steps have been taken in this regard?
Chair, I would try to explain them in terms of our regulations. Our disciplinary regulations outline a process that we follow. We establish a departmental misconduct, and there's various set of misconduct that are outlined in terms of those particular regulations. So we initiate a process of an investigation where we appoint an investigator to establish whether is there any transgression of the regulation. But then two, we follow from Section 34 also to 81 of the Public Finance Management Act, where we conduct a financial investigation, where we establish exactly whether there has been no damage caused to the state or loss as a result of the transaction. But we are also guided by the new legislation on irregular expenditure, whether the irregular expenditure misconduct has not been committed. Then the last part, we do criminal assessment. And if there's criminal investigation, we open a case docket, then the matter gets investigated. But should we establish that there is a departmental misconduct, the matter is taken through a tribunal process, and there is an outcome, and the, there's various outcomes. They start with the dismissal if it's serious, it warrants a dismissal. There's various other misconduct outcomes that it will depend on the presiding officers of such. Thank you.
Thank you very much. But it would appear that of the cases that were referred, only a third appear to have been dealt with. Almost two-thirds haven't been concluded. Processes are still ongoing. And there have been two cases referred to criminal investigation. But it appears there that's still pending. I mean, the AG did specifically mention that they were concerned about the delays in investigations and with consequent management. So what is being done by the department, by management, to actually resolve these timeously so that investigations actually happen on time, and we don't see, as we see in some departments, that investigations take so long that they essentially ultimately just lapse?
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think, firstly, the criminal investigations, there's very little control on it because we would be working with prosecution and justice that is on them, and we therefore afford that particular opportunity. But if we assist the investigators to gather the evidence which they need, then it can enhance the investigation, and then the case can move quicker in the justice value chain. So to accelerate that process, I have established a mechanism that brings the administrators, the internal audit, and the investigators, which then include SAPS, IP, and the other investigators at DPCI. We do see it sometime, and then we generate that information so that they speed up the investigations. But on the departmental side, I have instructed the establishment of the conduct committee within the organization so that firstly we check the status of investigations on quarterly basis. How far is the case going? If there are delays, they will be picked up immediately and then we unlock the process. The same applies. We also even check people who are on suspension. Why are the suspensions so long? And then we also put mechanisms to make sure that we cut them short so that you then pay people longer than while they are staying at home. Then the committee also extend to checking the outcomes, because some of the outcomes wouldn't necessarily warrant the conduct. If we're not satisfied, we take such matters on review. So this conduct committee is also working together with the regular expenditure committee that we established recently. So that is a standing practice now in the organization. Thank you.
General, you mentioned suspensions. How long are the longest suspensions that are currently in place?
Suspensions in terms of the prescribed time frame by the regulation, it's 60 days, and then maximum is 90 days. If we finish 90 days and the trial process is not yet concluded, the member, by virtue of the labor law, must come back to work. So we are always forced to conclude the trial process within that period. But then, most of the time, it depends on the complexity of the case. It does happen on several occasions that the case is not yet finalized. Maybe they challenge it to labor court and all other processes. Then we will finish that time frame before the case is concluded, and the member would then come back to work. but it's across the public sector. Thank you.
Could you tell me how the Hawks are involved with these internal processes? And also, in terms of the Hawks, have there been financial claims for monies to be repaid? And has there been any success in that regard?
Honourable Chair, I'm sure General Livia will elaborate, but I will just speak to a policy direction process to say the moment there's investigations, whether it emanates from irregular expenditure, corruption, whatever, there's the asset forfeiture part when such investigations happen. And it's always applied, but General Livia can elaborate more. With your permission, Chair.
No, that's fine.
Thank you.
Because he is the head of the Hawks, so it works even better. So, General Lebea, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Basically, when the DPCI is involved in the investigation, we carry on using the inside information as a witnesses that will come from the specific environment, those who are tasked with specific administration. We get statement from whoever on the acts that they shall have done. Some of the investigation we will be joined by the iPad. As we speak now, there are those matters that are with the iPad, but also part of us are involved as they are complicated, so we work closely with the iPad. So when the investigation is completed, it means that we shall be approaching the suspects. It's unlike when the suspects are outside the organization, when they are not known. This type of investigation, you normally get the individuals involved to give their side of the story, and with those you'll be able to table before the prosecutor to make a decision. So that is basically the processes that the Hawks get involved. So the starting point is that somebody else who know about those activities shall have to report a criminal case for investigation. So each investigation shall have a reference number. And then the nitty-gritties, we can only deal with the specifics based on a particular case number. Thank you.
And just my question about reclaiming monies that have been irregular. Have there been any successful reclaimings of monies?
That one, I think that the administrators will do. With regard to criminal investigation, there are various methods that you use. You have got if the matter goes to court, and then during the process, it is believed that certain people have benefited out of the irregular activities that constitute a crime. Then there are processes either through the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, and or if the money is still there as an exhibit, you can deal with that in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. Usually because the money will not be there readily available as an exhibit, you normally deal with the proceeds. In terms of Section 300 of the Criminal Procedure Act, it only comes at the conclusion of the case. So if it is during the investigation, we identify that this is the possible proceeds, that is when we involve the asset forfeiture unit to do some processes of preservation orders with the intention that when the matter is concluded, this can be forfeited to the state and taken into the CARA account. So as of now, I do not have specific details of each case. We can look at a case-by-case basis, but that is the process of dealing with the benefits that people shall have derived from the commission of offences.
Thank you very much. I want to move on to, these slides aren't numbered, Chair. I think it's slide 3 of the SAP summary, talking about the 636.4 million with CETA. And I know that there are historical issues with SAPs and CETA. So this particular issue of procurement and payments made directly to suppliers. And CETA confirmed irregularity. What is that specific transaction or those transactions and what's happening there?
I think the slide colleague she's referring to is titled Summary Annual Report Irregular Expenditure Note 23.1. Is that the one? Right? That, I think that's make that slide 4. Right? Slide 4. Yeah, right? So we'll number
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, the CFO will explain the transaction and I will fill it up. Thank you.
This particular transaction was as a result of a contract that was entered into by CETA on behalf of SAPS. SAPS paid. It is an IT contract with various items that were procured within that particular contract. CETA embarked on an investigation and they confirmed the transaction as irregular. And because it is SAPS who paid, it is an expense from SAPS account, then we are obligated to disclose that particular transaction. The reason for it to be irregular was various reasons, Chair. It included deviation from procurement processes, market analysis not done, non-compliance, use of preferred or sole service providers. So it was various reasons that made that particular transaction to be irregular. And before we concluded the financial statements, then we got confirmation in writing from CETA and a full report to say this has been investigated. It has been concluded as irregular expenditure. So we have disclosed it. It was a contract concluded on behalf of SAP by CETA.
Then, General Vuma will just also explain on the side of SAP what the action, because it's a third-party based transaction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And in as far as the members of the SAPs are concerned, in the spreadsheet, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's serial number 48, there are numbers of SAPs that are listed there who were involved in that particular transaction.
Page 7 of that schedule.
Yes. We took a disciplinary steps. We initiated the internal investigation with regard to the SAPS, and it was found most of the members were found not to have committed any misconduct on behalf of the service, because the money was transferred to CETA. It was CETA who entered into the contract on behalf of SAPS. But we have a few members that resigned in the process who are no more in the service. Thank you, Chairperson.
I see that the contract between SAPS and CETA has been the subject of SCOPA, the previous administration. I just want to know, it was subject, I believe, to an appeal to the Constitutional Court. Has that taken place yet or not? Because I see that we haven't been provided with the outcome of that. I just want to get a status update on that.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make sure, because the CETA matter is in twofold. Yeah, the first part is based on the matters that we're dealing with, which went to court, and the CETA proceeded with such matters in court. And that was against FDA. Yeah, I think FDA won against CETA, and even at Concord level. And then FDA got a court order against us then and Sita. So the matter is still on up to finalization on the IP code processes. So if it's at the verge of being concluded. If it doesn't get concluded, we're going back to court. Because now FDA is taking the matter with us. We are using the IP code. But we are now together with CETA. And in the previous appearance, we indicated to the committee that our problem on this matter is the national security risk, which is created by the IP code. Then we indicated that then we're going to engage FDA. The committee advised that we should do it through Treasury. We did, and Treasury employed a supplier that work on assessing the values. And the company gave a report. At the present moment, it's that report, the finalization of that process, so that we're able to acquire the IP code and then it get taken by the state. So if we deadlock, that's where then we can go back to court. But it's now between us, CETA, and Treasury. Thank you.
Thank you. Just as an aside, Chair, I think we must bear in mind that there were recommendations made by SCOPE in the previous administration. We should just keep our eye on that matter going forward.
Don't you make a note of that?
Then the $475 million in respect of communication-related services rendered by Telkom. What happened regarding that transaction?
This is a transaction that was picked up by SAPS where there was no valid contract in place. While Telkom was paid, we commissioned an investigation to determine and confirm if it is indeed irregular. That investigation was concluded. It came out indeed that this was an irregular transaction. The contract was not in place, however, expenditure went through. So the matter is at the process of then dealing with determining who was responsible for this, so that then we finalize the decision. It was a matter that we commissioned an investigation ourselves to determine indeed what transpired, but that part was concluded. Thank you.
So essentially you're saying that it's still under investigation. I just want to know, have people been identified as involved? Have there been any suspensions? What is happening there?
That is the portion that is still undergoing. Remember, the first portion we needed to confirm whether indeed this is irregular. So that has been concluded, the report was submitted. In relation to who is responsible and liable, that process is the one that is still ongoing.
Yeah, Honourable Chair, we will be able to give progress on this matter, either by report or to, because it's a matter that is almost current for finalization. So if the committee would direct, we can give a report or we can give it as progress in our next appearance. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, my concern with this is it's between June 2013 and April 2018. And just listening to what I was hearing earlier about the time limits, I'm just concerned that, I mean, some of this would have commenced at least 7 years ago. And it is a large transaction, so we please must keep an eye on it.
Directing to the page you're on, what's the heading of that slide?
It's the same slide.
Oh, okay.
It's the second point. It starts 475.
Oh, yes, that's right. On slide 4.
Maybe, Chair, my explanation, I think the person who cleans up usually takes the burden that goes with it. Because the moment you enforce internal controls and you start putting up systems, you will uncover all things that has been there. Like, for instance, the transaction itself is discovered April last year. But it's an old transaction, and it's not the only one. But the assurance we want to give to the committee is that the moment we uncover them, we deal with them immediately in terms of the prescripts. But it's a process of just cleaning up the organization. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Maybe because there's a, which one is preferable? We would want an update report or we flag it for the next hearing?
Well, I think it's very difficult to determine right now because, I mean, in terms of timelines with hearings, we don't actually know what is, you know, going to be happening. So I think let's just flag it as something we need to consider going forward, and when we have a better idea of timelines with other hearings. My concern is that it gets lost in the system, and we just have to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Okay, maybe let's do this then. General, can we get monthly reports on this matter so that we keep the matter alive, and when all systems go again, we will reflect and juxtapose the hearing against the monthly submission so that we give you the space and time to clean this up. So I suppose we can run both of them parallel. Are we good with that? Right, Honorable Somya, I'll note you will be the first one of the bad ones. Honorable Van Menen concludes. All right, can we continue?
Thank you. Then if we go on to the next page, which I think if you said the previous slide was 4, this one would be 5. It talks about non-compliance. It's headed Summary Annual Report Irregular Expenditure Note 2.3.1.
Yeah.
Non-compliance with the three quotations, no financial or procurement authority, non-compliance, triple PFA, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in terms of what you were saying with cleaning up the system, is that also reflected with some of these? Because I really do want to come back again to the Auditor General's concerns that we're not seeing essentially consequence management and follow-up of these transactions.
Thank you, Chair. That particular slide is actually summarizing the following slide with 38 transactions. We are making a summary to say what was the reasons mainly that made up this particular amount that we disclosed on the financial statement. We had transactions where there was non-compliance to internal prescripts. We had transactions where there were deviations. So it's sort of summarizing the reasons for these transactions, or the reasons for these irregular expenditure transactions that have been disclosed. So these are the internal control measures that we are talking about to say we are cleaning up. Other issues at station level talks to the issues of training. We also distributed the frameworks, and we also retrained your BIT committees. So there are measures that we are putting in place to ensure that indeed when we say clean up, because we can just concentrate on dealing with the qualification, we must then put systems that are sustainable that will ensure that we prevent reoccurrence of this particular transaction. So it's various reasons that makes up this 1 billion that was reported on the annual report. Thanks.
Because, I mean, if one looks at that slide, the 9 cases that really stand out, it's the 3 deviations from contract and the total expenditure when it's more than the contract amount. So I want to know what the investigations are into those 9 cases specifically, and also what measures are in place to ensure that variations and increases and essentially deviations on contracts are properly dealt with. What is the procedure to ensure that there actually are genuine reasons for those deviations and increases?
There were on the 6 there were 6 transactions or 5 where there was a different understanding between subs and H. The matter ended up with the state law advisor. Then eventually it was found that subs interpreted the matter correctly. The matter was sent to Treasury. Treasury did acknowledge, and the matter was also discussed with DH last year. So it's basically on the 15% variation for deviation. So that matter was not agreed at the conclusion of an audit in 1718. And then it went through that process of it ended up at the state law advisors, and Treasury did acknowledge that then the interpretation from SAPS was correct. There is a policy, there is a supply chain manual in the organization.
the supply chain people are aware in terms of what is required when you deal with your variations, which ones must be approved at National Treasury level. So there were six that were under dispute where there was an issue of interpretation between SAPS as well as AG, but that was where we ended up resolving that with Treasury as well as the state law advice, and it was communicated to AG.
Just 1 second, Honourable Stombie, can I request that we now halt a further entrances because I think we are fast reaching. I know that number is probably not very important because transmission is transmission and exposure is exposure. So whether it's, but we're trying to avoid overcrowding. I just think there was that guidance given, and I think we must be reasonable to it that Parliament had asked that we. I think we are done now, with all due respect to anybody that will come, and I hope they just understand that particular reality. And I hope that this will not now be interpreted to be saying there's a closed meeting. So I hope that won't be the interpretation. We're just managing risk. I'm sure the risk officer. So can we just now, yeah, all right. Nolfaminen, over to you.
I'll hand over to my colleague shortly. I just want to address here the action plan to address the irregular expenditure. If we could please just have that unpacked for us so that when we do start getting the monthly reports, we can also start measuring how that is working. Thank you.
So immediately after tabling, or while we were finalizing the audit, we then embarked on the process of putting together an action plan. And we also tabled the action plan when we tabled our annual report. Essentially, on irregular expenditure, we are addressing two things, the qualification as point one, as well as your normal non-compliance, so that systems are in place to avoid reoccurrence. On the qualification, as I indicated, we communicated with Treasury as well as AG, for them to be able to assist us to move away from the qualification. There was advice that was given to us through the Office of AG in relation to that particular matter. I spoke about it earlier in us dealing with the assessment of the entire population and ensuring that we don't under-disclose irregular expenditure that is taking place in the organization, because that was the bone of contention. AG was of the view that there's a lot of irregular transactions that are taking place, but what you disclose is understated. So we embarked on that process, and if that process succeeds, it might get us out of the irregular expenditure. We are working together with the audit committees, monitoring the entire process. The internal audit as well is assisting in terms of this particular process. That is portion number one, to deal with our opening balance. Once we are able to produce evidence to AG to say, this opening balance has moved from this point to that point, and this is how we have moved, we produce evidence, then it might get out of the qualification. Then we have got other systems that we had put in place to deal with this ongoing non-compliance as an organization. There are high-level interventions, including from the executive, from the accounting officer, to deal with such issues. Essentially, supply chain as a whole has been put on the table to say, how do we then deal with supply chain as an organization? The issue of appointing the head of supply chain, that process is ongoing. The issue of training the audit committees, the issues of capacity at station level, the issue of revision of our policies. There was an issue with AG to say our supply chain manual is outdated. We've embarked on those processes of revisiting the delegation. So there's a whole range of measures that we are putting in place to deal with the weaknesses and the challenges that we are experiencing in dealing with procurement within the organization. So that audit response plan, it is available and it is monitored through the audit committee process as well.
Maybe, Honorable Chair, the new head of supply chain will be starting 1st April. We're done with the appointment. And secondly, we also designed the contract management strategy, because our biggest problem is in contracts. And the that strategy is now in the implementation, because I think we designed it 8 months ago, as last year. So currently, we also have a contract management committee in place, and so that the contract management process is properly and thoroughly scrutinized, and we monitor the contracts, and the most of the irregular expenditure we also incur from expired contracts and quite a lot of other confusion. But these are some of the measures that we have put in place. What will be following shortly, immediately after the divisional commissioner, the new divisional commissioner has started, we are then going to overhaul supply chain, total restructuring. Thank you.
Can I just ask how long was the manager, how long did it take to essentially appoint someone, how long was the position vacant?
I think the last head of supply chain terminated in November last year. Yes. So then there's a dire need we cannot do without one. And the one other obvious thing is that there has been some investigations and quite a lot of other problems before he terminated. Thank you.
Sorry, can I get clarity on, you say, investigations and problems? What do you mean by that?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe important for me to mention would be that the former head of supply chain was put on suspension before he terminated service as a result of investigations. There was consequence management also applied.
Could I just ask for the clarity, or when you say consequence management?
There was a criminal investigation initiated regarding one contract, the Blue Light. Then, after all, he and the other two members were put on suspension, and the process continued. So then, up until his date of termination.
Was that the 75 million when you said the Blue Lights?
Yes.
Now, this is potentially a concern. You say his termination, what consequent management has there been? Has the investigation been concluded? And if there has been a termination of employment, I mean, is that where it ends, or the criminal case? What is happening there?
Honourable Chair, all the investigations are still continuing, both criminal, departmental, and Section 81. So beyond the termination, because the termination has been done in terms of the special provision which government made available for government officials. So he chose to. But all the investigations are still intact, and they will still proceed up to conclusion. Thank you.
Chair, can I just ask that it's exactly that kind of detail that we do get in our report, so that we see what happens? Because we've seen with other departments, I'm thinking particularly of correctional services, that officials leave and then essentially nothing really comes out of that. I mean, I think I can hand over to my colleagues.
All right. I think we are doing well on time, colleagues. Right. Okay. No, I've noted the hands. I just want to tie one matter down that came from... in this schedule, so colleague, this one on irregular expenditure. Because people are listed by name Manje, not their title. Commissioner, there are three generals who are a constant feature in this schedule. It's Major General Mkwena, General Pile, and General Zalda. almost page by page as you go through. And if you just sample on page, on slide, page 7, for example, what's the status of all those generals? Where are they? What positions do they hold? Are they still part of the establishment? Are they part of criminal cases? So that we can tie it up with the amounts of money attached to them are concerned. I mean, number 46 colleagues, the procurement in excess of 500,000. Deviation from procurement process which does not comply with SCM laws and regulations to the value of 2.7 million rand. You go to 47. The BAC approved an unsolicited offer. This is to the value of 4.8 million rand. So can we just, those three generals, Gwena, Pillay, and Dladla, where are they? Then Honorable Samuel will be number one, Honorable Hadeb, and Honorable Swartz. Honorable Liz will then tie this section down. Okay, General, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mokoena is just the person we've been speaking about.
Okay.
Right. The former Supply Chain Divisional Commissioner.
Okay.
Who's left the service. There's both criminal and departmental investigations continue against him.
Alright.
General Pillay was charged and suspended. The investigation continued. It was not concluded up until his time frame lapsed in terms of the labor law. He came back, we placed him alternatively while the departmental process.
What is the designation, Commissioner?
Is the Major General Pillay? He was at supply chain.
Okay.
And then now he's at inspectorate. We place him at the inspectorate.
His matter is ongoing.
Is ongoing, both criminal and departmental.
Okay.
Yeah, General Dladla is only a departmental matter against her. She's still a supply chain, but her matter is about to be disposed.
She was at supply chain?
No, she is still at supply chain.
Doing? What's the role at supply chain commission?
With your permission, let me give General Roma just to explain it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. General Dladla is currently doing movable government property and services. She's responsible for logistics within supply chain, but she is part of the members that have been identified in terms of the renewal strategy in terms of dealing with supply chain matters. But there are a number of matters, of course, that she is under investigation.
So was she suspended as well and then time lapsed?
Not yet, sir.
So she's still at work. So when you say a matter has been concluded, concluding investigation or concluding the disciplinary process in itself?
The matters are still under investigation.
And she's still at work?
Yes.
In supply chain?
Yes, sir.
Maybe Chair, let me then just try to explain it in terms of the regulation. What we do first, we commission the investigation.
Okay.
And while we're commissioning the investigation, the member would still be there where he's working. But immediately after the investigation report is presented, we make a decision whether the member must be suspended or must be placed alternatively. So the investigation against Dladla is still on. Immediately we receive the report, the decision is going to be made.
Alright. So these are all separate investigations for these individuals?
They are separate investigations, Chair.
Albeit that they appear in quite a number of irregular expenditures as an alliance, as a team.
Chair, the reason why they would appear... They would appear on a number of transactions because they were part of the bid adjudication committee.
Right. draft. So you're not investigating the structure of the Paid Adjudication Committee in its entirety, because that's then where the Uganga took place.
That particular structure was reconstituted, Chair. They were removed from that particular structure.
On what basis? Was there an investigation done? And what did it find? Or you just said, no, we don't like it, and I would imagine that they must be... I mean, I'm certainly not saying you should not have overhauled it, but what's the content of the decision? Is it an overhaul in a vacuum, or an overhaul based in an investigation which would have unearthed certain things?
Thank you, Chairperson. Out of the preliminary information that we had, that there has been a number of irregular expenditures that directly to the members of the BAC, we decided to constitute a new BAC so that we remove them. They go through under investigation, so that once the investigation has given us who it was responsible amongst that, then we institute the other processes. But we remove them under the basis that it was discovered that majority of the members that are in the BAC have been part of the of this irregular expenditure.
All right. As I tied this down, I'm sorry, colleagues. So the BAC, which all these three generals formed part, is being investigated?
Yes, Chair. It's being investigated. And I want to explain the first clarity that the Chair wanted. Whenever there's a matter that has been uncovered, we also assess the harm that it may cause to the organization before the finalization of the departmental investigation. Like, for instance, the build committee, after that first information was established, could no longer be allowed to continue to process other cases. Yes, and if they would have continued, it would have caused damage to both the organization and government. Then there was a need that we must remove them immediately, pending, while the investigation was still pending.
Right, so the suspensions are not linked to the BAC work?
No, they are not linked to the BAC, but to other cases. The BAC investigation report is still coming. It's on.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, Honorable Somia.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Swart, Honorable Hadebe, and then Mazamane, you will cover this section for us. All right.
Sure. Thanks, Chair. I was listening to the CFO. In the first instance, the discovery of understatement on irregular expenditure. And thereafter, the actual redress of such understatement. And the CFO has indicated that they have a serious problem of capacity. You see, how have you gone about to address that problem of capacity? Because she has cited that even at a station level, as you move, as procurement occurs, these kind of occurrences are picked up, and if therefore there's such a seriousness of undercapacity, it ought to be addressed. I hear that from your side, Commissioner, you're talking about systems which have caused some kind of an outlook which ought to be driven in, but this under capacity. How are we dealing with this instance of capacity? That's the first point. The second point which I wanted to bring in, Chair, is the point that relates to investigations. I think the point was trying to bring in now is indicative of a step-by-step investigations which are eating in time, eating in the integrity of the service, eating into the integrity of government. Looking to the cases which are cited, they have been there for quite some, even before our time, you see. But because you are saying let's investigate irregular expenditure. And then we find that the expenditure is irregular. Let's then get back and investigate who has caused that irregular expenditure. And then you find out that so-and-so is that. And then let us investigate what is it that we can do about those who have caused that irregular expenditure. So all those kinds of steps are taking time such that you yourself, you could be retired at the time when they are finalized. What is it that could be done better to ensure that when you do those investigations, when you do investigation of regular expenditure, no, in any event, you tattle a bucket, 20 cents, maybe you tattle 5 cents, that is irregular. So you know already who to pick up the bucket. So why do you have to get into a separate investigation when you know that there is that kind of, well, those kinds of instances, why do you take so long on the investigative side such that you take your time to correct the wrong going forward? And then the last point...
So it doesn't get lost, let's get a response to that,
okay.
Then you'll come in. Right?
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, firstly, the question of the capacity. We have identified posts, supply chain management posts that are vacant through the HR process, which we prioritize for filling. And currently, there are also processes that are signed off, including promotions. But secondly, it's a training that we require. In terms of the current staff that is there, I think we have also prioritized their training and orientation on supply chain. Then we have also then decided on an ongoing capacity building so that we then make sure that we do not run out of capacity. One of our challenges is that SAPS at some stage has been following a centralized approach. At some other stage is a decentralized approach. So when you follow a decentralized approach, you then need to build capacity at that particular level. And so what we are working on is giving more capacity to provinces. And the third part, how we are doing this, we have also decided to review the structure and the resource management of the organization. We're scaling down from headquarters level. We're taking capacity down to stations, which is the migration of resources from the macro level to production level. So amongst others, we're also looking at people who have got supply chain management capacity, taking them down to those particular levels. Then with regard to the investigations, the first thing that I want to explain, Chair, is that investigation is as easy as how soon you start it. And it is also as much complex as late as you start it. Because if you start it late, you struggle with evidence. And there's quite an extended field that you must cover. So such an investigation takes longer. Now, irregular expenditure is more of a prevention subject than an investigation subject. It depends more on your internal controls. So what makes these investigations to take longer? It's just because they are old. Some people are no longer there, some have retired, even if no one takes responsibility. But what I've also uncovered, Chair, is that these processes were not linked exactly to the performance management system. And then I've given an instruction that we link them to the performance management system and we strengthen accountability so that if there's irregular expenditure, we hold someone accountable immediately. We better get rid of that particular person. other than going into a long investigation. So that process is also running concurrently with these ones. But currently, we just developed a support mechanism to the investigators just to enhance the investigation so that we finish them. This is the first phase of the investigations. Most of them are old, but the new investigations won't take as long as these ones. Thank you, Chair.
No, but here is the Dada issue. Here is the Dada matter, which comes up with other three officers, with their ranks, and she has even been given a task in terms of a restructured organization in terms of the procurement and the other phases of doing that work. Why is it still dragging so much while other three who have been performing a similar task, other two similar tasks, are somewhat being suspended or not necessarily involved at work currently?
All right. Maybe let's get to the time frames. Age analysis of the Dladla matter, when did it start, and then maybe that will put it into perspective. Right, General Vuma.
Thank you, Chairperson. The two cases of General Mngwena and General Pile are as a result of a criminal case. That is why it was quick and easy to deal with them. However, in terms of the total number of all BAC members, the process is still undergoing, hence Dladla is part of that. So they were dealt with not only under the BAC matter, but on other matters in terms of the criminal investigation that the National Commission alluded to, as well as the other disciplinary matter. It's not with regard to them, all of them under the BAC, their matters are still under investigation.
Time frame?
I will provide monthly report.
No. When did you start?
We started last year, and as the National Commissioner.
Can I request that she get her story right? We are just given 2 minutes for her to look, but did that the matter? Is linked to the BAC investigation. Yes, I think if they will just find the date when exactly did the investigation start, we'll come back to the committee.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
So that's fine, considering that monthly report, General, must not be open-ended. We need to know what's the outer date of that monthly report, right? Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my first comment is based on a question you had asked them. Now, I just want to check whether this department is disputing the findings of the AG in terms of findings on irregular expenditure, when the AG says that majority of your root causes are caused by not following adequate procurement competitive processes when awarding other contracts, bid tenders. In contravention of legislation management, BEC and BAC simply did not ensure that the awards made were in line with supply chain management legislation. But the last one is what's very interesting. Bid specs are also changed during the process to fit supplier delivery.
All right. Let's get a reaction to that in the response. CFO, I'm advised that you are still not projecting, and the recording is somewhat.
Thank you, Chair. We are not disputing AG findings. During the process of the audit, there will be findings that are put to the table. We have a discussion with AG. Then there are agreements on others. There are no agreements, but eventually, it's either we agree that the all of us with AG that this is irregular, or we agree that it is not irregular. We don't dispute However, there were a few that I referred to where there was an issue of variation that led to the disagreement with AG. That particular matter was brought to the attention of Treasury. It went through the state law advisor. It was confirmed that it was the interpretation SAPS was correct. AG was given that particular report. But there is nowhere where we dispute, we discuss with AG, where they pick up this particular nature of transactions, where indeed it is visible that there is maladministration, then there is an agreement, and we put such, and we agree we put such and we disclose such. Hence you would see an increase in terms of our disclosure. Remember, we come from a situation where, as AG was saying, we have understated with about 900 million. So we dealt with that. We then had an agreement where we agreed that there was maladministration and we disclosed that. And then as and when you enhance these controls, your disclosure will go up. I must just caution as well that for 1920, the disclosure will go up in terms of this process. For 1920, this process that we are embarking upon, that we have agreed with AG to say, let's then confirm, assess everything, confirm that indeed these transactions are free of error. So we don't dispute findings. We discuss with AG, we agree where there's differences in interpretation of frameworks and legislation. We involve National Treasury, and then at the end of the day, we then come to an agreement. You will see an increase in terms of disclosure of these transactions up until the system is mature, our the internal controls are adequate and effective, then you will not have ex of irregular expenditure. But we do discuss with AG. We don't dispute unnecessarily. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
You would not have cases of people being involved in BAC CFO if you were not disputing. I'm sure you did not hear my sentence properly. I am not saying that you are disputing findings. I am saying that you have cases where you have changed tender processes in your BEC to suit suppliers while you are busy with the process. That are findings of the AG. So I am saying to you that is in black and white. So you are agreeing now. It's fine. Let me go on to my next question, Chair. During the AG's presentation to us, you had 12 companies which had long outstanding investigations of irregular expenditure. Of those 12 companies, to date, you are still spending during 2019-2020 financial year on five of those companies. So I just want to understand, how do you procure from companies which are still under investigation? You've got BC Electronics, Equasi Trading, Sapso Chemicals, Mayimela DE, Sakukuni Land, Dry Cleaners. I don't know if it's a JV, it's just in brackets. UBC Construction, Velotain 118CC, Lita Medical Group, Stratacom, Marichaba Trading, FDA, Sharpline Graphics, and Tiro Communications. So in 2016-2017, you procured from all of them. These are suppliers with long outstanding investigations of cases possible of irregular expenditure. So I just need an explanation why Velotain and Stratacom, Madichaba Trading, FDA, I heard you during your comments that they won a case against you. But even so, FDA again appears under your register where you have not registered an amount under them, but you've got additional amounts registered which are undisclosed, according to the AG. So I just need explanation on the five, which is Sharpline Graphics, FDA, Marichaba, Stratacom, and Velotain. That how do you still procure from people that have got long outstanding investigations?
All right.
Honorable Chair,
we'll have WR next.
Yeah, I think firstly on this one, standing instructions, is that if any company has been put under investigation, we firstly check the status of the investigation, whether that investigation was finalized and how was it disposed of. But secondly, we also verify with Treasury that particular company, how does it stand in the Treasury records. But these ones, at the present moment, we don't have information at hand whether with regard to their current status. If we can be afforded an opportunity, we can provide a report on the five. Thank you, Chair.
The information I am giving to you is from Treasury because the AG would not have got it from anywhere else. So I am telling you that your department is still doing business with these five. This is information as fresh as this morning. So I want to understand from you, Uguti, if you do not know and still want to go and ask Uguti Nenzantoni Lapet Department in, what are you guys doing? Because this I am giving to you now is fresh information. And then, Chair, before we go to Hatebe, they must just give us an explanation in terms of the suppliers that are not registered in their register but have additional amounts that are not disclosed, but the amounts are there, are registered. Uguti, how do these things happen? There is something not okay, because the AG says that this irregular expenditure was traced to irregular expenditure register, which is required to be maintained by management for all cases of irregular expenditure. Out of a few found to have been included, some were found to have been disclosed and understated amounts, and they give us the amounts. I'm sure you also say to us, you must still go and investigate what are the amounts that are disclosed in the register as additional amounts. But whereas you, as a department, are not maintaining your own register, it's blank. But the additional column, equal, and it's millions. Each company, if you did not do maths, you won't be able to read the numbers. You'll end up saying something else because it's millions. So I want to understand that. How do these things happen? We understand you saying you are still going to fill posts, you are still going to train, you are still going to do all these things. But 3 years of qualified findings, three. And then Sisayo trainer, Sisayo Wenza, e-mentoring and coaching, ngemali zabantu, is unacceptable, Chair.
Right, let's tie that down. I think, Commissioner, you can go back and investigate the register of people whom you are still doing a business with, and to determine whether are those who are still under investigation still there, and what they are doing, and the nature of whether it's expansions or deviations or whatever may have happened. So the whole full set of circumstances, and I think Honorable Swartz will hand over the list that she has, and you will provide explanations for each of the ones that she's given. And in the report, so today is the 17th of March, so in the report, which should reach us by the 17th, let me say 18th of April, let us then have the full explanation of all those that are there as part of the monthly reporting that you are going to do, and then it will be circulated to members. So I think we can tie that one down in that fashion. Right, Honorable Hadebe, with an H, is very particular.
No, thanks, Chair. Indeed, I'm Honorable Hadebe with H. And Chair, just to borrow in your words that in this polygamy of ours, AG is the first wife. So we rely much on our first wife. And indeed, he has confirmed to us, and which is a concern, that there are still areas of dispute between the department and the AG when it comes to non-compliance in relation to what constitutes non-compliance as irregular expenditure. Second to that, the processes and procedure in disclosing and investigating such irregular expenditure. Despite the fact that, Chair, you have what we call irregular expenditure framework from National Treasury, which is very clear and specific on how you go about a first a recording alleged irregular expenditure and how do you go about investigating and disclosing. And as a result, the financial year under review, irregular expenditure identified by audit process, meaning which you did not disclose, for the three financial year, it's amounting to close half a billion, 490 million. Now, these are irregular expenditure that you did not disclose, but were identified by Auditor General as irregular, close to half a billion. And then he goes further to say the irregular expenditure register lacks sufficient and appropriate details such as contract number, expenditure amount, details of the contravention, and names of suppliers. Still, the irregular expenditure gives you a clear description that you need to give details of such. So the question that I'm interested in, despite having this regulation, why do you still have disputes with Auditor General on what constitute irregular expenditure and how do you go about disclosing such? Let me remind you that in terms of the law, as an accounting officer, a general CFO, you are required to prevent regular expenditure from happening. If you are unable to prevent such, you are therefore required to disclose, in fact, you detect and disclose all alleged irregular expenditure. And according to auditor, you have not done that because of the disputes. It therefore appears that the department is not grasping or it's deliberately ignoring the legislation when it comes to what constitutes irregular expenditure. In your presentation, you have constantly mentioned the investigation of what constitutes irregular expenditure. But the law tells you, for example, if you have not sourced three coats, that constitutes irregular. You don't need to go have an investigator to declare that it's irregular. You did not source three coats for certain procurement which is less than a certain amount. But your department, you prolong the inevitable. You appoint the investigator. It's like when you see a traffic light in front of you, you still want to invest, is this a traffic light or not? That's what's happening here. I just want to draw your attention because I heard you talking about cases that you've won in terms of the dispute, whether or not it was irregular or not. Whether these that have been highlighted by AG here are those cases that you referred to. The following new incidences of irregular expenditure were identified by audits. There's a company called Robust Consulting Engineers, subcontracted more than 25% of the contract value for four subcontractors whose BEE status level remain unconfirmed. And There's another one, railway infrastructure project, subcontracted more than 25% of the contract value to truck bodies to the value of 2.3 million. And there's a whole lot of contractors, the deviation not meeting the criteria of being a sole supplier. St. George Hotel, Shell Case, Intense Protection and Tourism Services. Now, just to mention but few, these are the cases where the AG himself, while conducting audit processes, discovered this and he did not disclose. So my questions are twofold. Why do you need investigators to tell you that these transactions are irregular when you have a legislation to assist you? Two, are you grappling with understanding and comprehending the legislation on what constitutes irregular expenditure?
All right.
Because lastly, the more time you take in investigating, you are failing on the opportunity to stop such transactions from transpiring in the future. You are prolonging the inevitable. Thank you.
All right. General, I think there was a comment and two questions. Then we will proceed. Honorable Liz, you will be next. And then we'll go into the next section, my colleagues. General.
No, thank you, Chair. I think firstly, we also equally rely on AG. And I want to say there's no dispute. Earlier on, Honorable Chair, I said the organization itself currently, we are on a campaign to uncover more irregular expenditures which were undisclosed in the past. Amongst those, there's transactions which has been uncovered by us. Now, those that has been uncovered by the Auditor General, we are actually appreciating that, to say they are helping us to uncover those processes. But as to, Chair, why we are investigating, it's not because we don't understand the law, but there are cases. I think our operations as an organization, they are different, they're unique from any other public sector. Therefore, as a result of the operational nature of SAPS, we do need an investigation into certain transactions just to understand whether does it not emanate from the uniqueness of those operations. Like the Honorable Member Chair touched on one of the examples where there's a one code. Sometimes the subs will be compelled by the operational circumstances to rely on one code, even if there can be 10 others. But due to operational uniqueness, we could be compelled to that one code. Then we need to justify those circumstances operationally. And we have also just recently established a modus operandi analysis center. If criminals invent a new modus operandi today, and if we don't respond, and then can create disaster, then we need to respond immediately. And there could only be one sole service provider that can assist. In such a case, we then investigate just to look to establish the circumstances under which such an irregular transaction has been established. But further to that, Chair, I'm also in discussions, we're in a process with both AG and as well as Treasury to explain the uniqueness of certain operations in SAPS. Yeah, that do not necessarily allow us to stay within the current policy framework, but we don't want to violate those laws. We want to appeal for adjustments just to to accommodate, flexibility to come accommodate such operational type of interventions. And Treasury is open for us, then they said we can come and discuss. But while the laws are not yet changed, we stay strictly within the laws and we comply. Thank you.
All right.
Chair, I am not disputing investigating to determine the culprits and the recourse in terms of consequence management. I'm saying, why do you have investigators to detect and disclose irregular expenditure? You don't need investigator for such an exercise. If AG can come and do audit towards the end of the financial year and still able to uncover close to half a billion of irregular expenditure.
All right, well, I think...
Does that need investigators? Or is the prerogative, as per the legislation, of an accounting officer and executive, an accounting authority to embark on such an exercise? That is my concern, Chair. You don't have to go to town and look for investigate.
All right. I think the general principle, our expectation is that irregular expenditure must be investigated. So I think what we will look at the process that they are following in investigation and satisfy ourselves as to whether we... Yeah, so can we park it at that...
investigate after we have disclosed.
That you need to investigate to ascertain then disclose. Right. Yeah. Right. I think let's tie it down at. But Commissioner, you can respond.
Yeah. Thanks. No, it's just my request, Chair. I wanted to make an example. There's a process in SAP they call the OCTA. Unconventional policing approach, and in terms of that process, I will never disclose anything, because if I disclose, then it will abort a total operation and it might have national security implications. So this is just the example I'm saying, and that's why I would agree with Chair on the investigation before I confirm what the Auditor General would have uncovered. I need myself to satisfy myself that yes, indeed. But I am just saying there's certain operations in the organization that require certain particular approaches. And there's certain cases of operations where we can share information.
Let's do this, colleagues.
Can I be granted an opportunity? Because what is disclosed by the Auditor General, are you saying those that are here in front of us are in contravention?
Honorable Hadeb,
no,
I'm
going
to request you to defer to the Chair. What I'm saying is there is a process now with Treasury on these matters that they are saying we have to look at this and they want flexibility. I'm still sitting here trying to process myself what flexibility entails. You see, so let us note this particular aspect because as far as we are concerned, we remain steadfast to the PFMA. So National Treasury will have to take us into confidence into the request for flexibility to what does that entail? Because it must not set precedence. You see. And two, irregular expenditure must be investigated and it must be disclosed. It's a non-negotiable. That I think must be very clear to SEPs that we want those disclosures. So that I've noted what the Commissioner is saying about this process, but I don't know.
pleasure is not here today. So we will note that and we will come back to it, because I think we still need further detail about what that means and categorize it. But if it's a blank check, no. So as far as I'm concerned, the issue is irregular expenditure must be disclosed, irregular expenditure must be investigated, and in the final analysis, there must be consequence management for all irregular expenditure in one way or the other. All of those things must be understood. If there was any ambiguity about them, we clear the ambiguity and emphasize its reality. Right. So can you tie it at that? Right, Honorable Hatem.
No, thanks, Chair. I take your point, but I'd like to get clarity. What was disclosed by AG, that was not disclosed by the department? Are they saying they did not disclose these irregular expenditure because of their non-disclosure act or what? And not mentioning the contract, the value, and the supplier? Because AG, on his own, has disclosed this, that which we have failed to do.
Let's get a final comment, please, okay, on this matter.
That's the clarity, Chair, that I'm seeking.
Honorable Chair, during the process of the audit, AG will pick up transactions that would have taken place during
Invoice
that year.
CFO.
AG will pick up transactions that would have taken place during that particular year. The year under review is 1819. During the audit, they would then pick up, assess transactions that happened during 1819 and discover to say, but this particular transaction, when we go through it, there is a non-compliance in terms of this legislation or that legislation. And we discuss with the AG to confirm whether we agree with them or not, and then if we agree, then it is disclosed at that particular point in time. Then we finalize the annual report we table. After we table, then we deal with that particular transaction that would have been picked up during the audit. And I do understand there was an issue of the register. Yes, we had challenges in terms of the register. We have embarked on a process to deal with the register to ensure that it conforms to that it's supposed to conform with. So we have discussed all these challenges with AG. There's been advice. We are having challenges within your supply chain environment in terms of other aspects and certain matters, hence your training, your capacity, and all those type of issues. We do understand your question, indeed, Honorable Member, that why would you then, as an organization, sit with a situation where a transaction is irregular and you don't determine it yourself? It is determined by AG. There are challenges around that space, but immediately we agree it has to be disclosed, and then we deal with that particular transaction. Thank you.
All right.
Yes, if I can just add, in short, we don't dispute the findings of the AG. The only findings of the AG which we did not agree with were the ones that we referred to state law advisors. And it's because they were justifiable under those operational circumstances they were incurred. But the process, Chair, that I have indicated that is on with Treasury and as well as AG is not on current transactions, is on policies that impacts operationally that we are discussing with them to say these are the dynamics we have under the current policy framework, which is there under both the AG as well as Treasury. That is without violating anything. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Liz, then we'll, colleagues can do further follow-ups once it's done, and then we'll tie it down on this section. So, yeah, if there's any other matter, colleagues need to do that. We'll take a humble approach so we can go through all of it properly. Rather, we don't, you know, let's just be calm and probe. Honorable Liz?
you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to you and your team, Commissioner. Commissioner, let me say at the outset that my reports from colleagues who have dealt with you are positive, and that you and your team are making a great effort to clean up a dirty mess. So as a positive remark, please take it as such. The question of we're dealing with in this part of the meeting is irregular and wasteful and whatever expenditure, and the lists are long. They go back many years. Much of it, even the old stuff, was discovered by the AG in the 2016-17 audit, according to Annexure A, which was given to us from the Auditor General. So it's a big job. I think I heard the CFO say that there was discussions about the action plan to sort this out with the AG. What is the end date to resolve all this?
Thank you, Chair. There are different steps with different end dates.
The final end date to clear up the current mess, not taking into account new instances.
March this year, because those issues must have been completed so that when we get into the new financial year, those particular issues are sorted out. So majority of the timelines there was March 2020.
So are we going to achieve that timeline?
Not on all of them. For instance, we had long-term, little bit of short-term ones that we were dealing with. The one project that we would get the regular expenditure, we should be done by end of March. So that when we deal with the disclosure for the 1920, that particular matter is closed. So that is the big one, that by end of March we would be done with that particular exercise, because it has an influence in terms of how we're going to disclose the opening balance for the 1920.
Maybe, Chair. Yeah, what I just can add the direction from my side as accounting officer. I gave the plan 12 months final report on the 12 months, but within the plan, there's matters that require short-term, medium-term, to long-term, and that is attention. Now, those matters that require medium-term, they will be transferred to the AOP, the annual operational plan of the financial year that is going to start for further attention. But to correct what AG has pointed out, it's within the 12 months. Thank you.
Chairman, through you, so essentially then the 2019-20 is going to be qualified again, unless everything is finalized by the end of March. And am I correct in hearing that because of the time that these things take, some of it won't be completed by the end of March. Some won't be. Correct. Okay, so we expect, and Mr. Chairman, may I suggest then that as it's not going to be completed by the end of March, that the Commissioner agreed to supply this committee with a monthly report on the progress being made. And I don't think we need a spreadsheet like this. I would think a spreadsheet saying number of outstanding items at the beginning of the month, number dealt with during the month, number left, and then a report on the ones dealt with. What were the consequences? Either resolved or member dismissed or something like that. So, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I would like to ask for that. So, an opening balance of the number of investigations or incidents, number dealt with, closed, number left, And then details are the ones closed, not everything that hasn't yet been dealt with. If that's possible, I think...
No, that's fine. I think we are in agreement with that. It's part of the tracking, so who should note that. General Vuma, you still have to come back to us on that matter that you are getting dates. Please don't lose sight of it. Right, Honorable Liz?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, your department has in the past, and I hope no longer, been quite good at doing the wrong thing with spending money. But, Commissioner, even now, they don't seem to be too good about keeping law and order, which seems to be, to me, your main function. And I'll give you the example of the riots that took place in Ladysmith over the last 4 weeks, and your officers simply were unable or unwilling to prevent them in the first instance or to bring them under control. So I think that the emphasis we're placing on expenditure is important, but surely more important is the need to keep law and order. I mean, you've got criminals and thugs bringing the economy of a town to a standstill for a month. Isn't that something you should be dealing with?
I fully agree, Honorable Chair. That's our core mandate, yes, to fulfill. And the restoration of public order is a high priority for us. And we also invest a lot of the budget in public order. But whenever we also deal with public disorder, it's not only SARS that becomes the role player. Like for instance, the Ladysmith, they were also root causes. And we then bring in the other role players so that we work together to resolve the public order dispute while we bring in action. But as the police, it is our responsibility to maintain law and order. Thank you.
Thank you, and in this instance that wasn't achieved, and the main instigator of all this goes on radio, and as far as I know, he's still a free man. But nevertheless, Mr. Chairman, it's somewhat outside the ambit of this meeting, and you have been very lenient about letting me continue, but it's an important, an issue very close to my heart.
It's a
Thank
live
you.
Matter. All right. I want to go, General, if colleagues, we may all just go to the schedule on irregular expenditure. I want to sample a few transactions there. So this schedule here, not that one, General Vuma, this one here, the schedule on irregular expenditure. Just going to sample a few, and then when we're done there, we're going to proceed to this one, colleagues, the one in blue. On page 2 of that schedule, Item 13-2019, deviation from contract, to the value of 475 million rand to Telkom. And the note there says, well, type of discipline, it's under investigation, status awaiting condemnation, new progress awaiting condemnation. But the note is most disturbing. No documents in relation to the existing contract or extension of contract could be provided. Now, this is to the value of 475 million rand to Telkom. So what is this contract, and how is it possible that there is no documents in relation to this contract of such a large amount of money? And how did it possibly go through? So I want to like to focus on that particular one. If my reading is correct, yeah, that's 475 million rand to Telkom.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We'll afford first our TMS with your permission,
right.
And General Nelson, the first response.
General, you can delegate as you as you deem fit for the want of time, because we understand that whatever they say on your behalf.
Is this the amount of contract or the amount of deviation?
They're going to explain that. That's why I'm zooming into it, because I had flagged it. It's a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
So let's give them.
I hope it's not the amount of deviation.
All right. So what is that 475 million rand?
Chairperson, good morning. Honorable members. The 475 essentially is a contract entered into by the department with Telkom, and in respect of this particular contract, it serves before the bid adjudication committee at the time, and there was also the CETA involvement in terms of looking at certain of the elements of the contract. Then there was an agreement concluded between the department and Telkom, and at the time of serving before the bid adjudication committee, there was a then subsequent finding made that there are possible irregularities in this regard. So the investigation was then conducted in order to confirm whether an existing valid contract existed between the department and Telkom. So it's technology management related contract, and it's the full value of the contract.
So that 475 is the full value of the contract?
Yes, Chief.
Why is it flagged as a deviation from the contract?
The deviation essentially in terms of the specific requirements as stipulated in the agreement between Telkom and the department in terms of the deliverables, in terms of the specification requirements.
So that's a deviation. So that 475 is the deviation amount.
Correct.
Then what were you? So the 475 million rand is the deviation in total. It's the whole contract. Was it a new contract? Just 1 second. Was it a new contract?
It's a new contract, Chairperson.
That served before the PAC. That's under question.
Correct.
Now, because in your notes you say no documents in relation to the existing contract extension could be provided. Have those been found?
Chairperson, the comment talks to specifically there was only an agreement between the department and Telkom and not a specific contract. It regulates then the relationship and the contractual arrangement.
So where's the contract? Is there a contract?
No contract, Chairperson.
But if that's the case, is the agreement still in force?
It's currently in force still.
With no contract?
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may try and explain this one. We discovered last year when Telkom actually started to complain in terms of the services that they've rendered to subs, that they have not been receiving the payment. And when we sit and interrogated the reasons why are they not receiving the payment, we discovered that the payment was stopped as a result that the contract under which subs continued to pay Telkom was an old contract that has since expired. So the documents, I think they were removed in terms of the investigation that was initiated by the accounting officer.
Removed, what do you mean?
I think when they wrote here that no document in relation to the... I'm sorry, Chairperson. I'm just confused. The documents of the new contract, there's no new contract.
That's what I'm trying to establish. Yes. So there was an old contract.
Yes, it was an old contract.
Then that contract expired.
Yes.
So is it a deviation or an expansion? See, that's why I was drilling into this. Was this an expansion or an extension or a deviation? Because if it was a deviation, what were you deviating from?
check
either and way, there's a material question. Okay, Commissioner?
Check and we, can we allow our legal head to just clarify the contract to the committee?
Okay, let's get
thank
the
you.
Clarity and then we'll come in, colleagues, just on this one. All right,
thank
legal?
You. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, National Commissioner. National Commissioner, with your permission, I want to ask the Chair to give me an opportunity. I'm trying to retrieve the documents in terms of which we advised on this matter. So if I can be given an opportunity within 10 minutes, I will come back to you with a response on the full background of the matter.
All right.
I do not want to commit without having the information at my disposal.
No, that's fine. I think, colleagues, we agree. Can I then park this one? And we'll get questions once legal has spoken to us. Right, the next one I wanted to go to, colleagues, is the one right below that one. 19.9 million, 14-2013, contract expired, and there is, in the notes, extension of expired contract expenditure occurred in relation to an expired contract. When did that contract expire? It was to... Yeah, same page, the one below the one, the Telkom one. Digico, GMKCG, right? What's the 2013, that's in 2013. So we're now in 2020, 7 years later. What's the status of that particular one? It's 19.9 million rands. Because it says under investigation, awaiting condonation.
Thank you, Chair. Our Head of Technology Management
present
will explain.
Technology for IR.
Honorable Chair.
Mike, please. Oh, I didn't see the light there. All right. There we go. All right.
Honorable Chair, this was at the time when the contract was extended from the 2013. There was a contract that ended in 2010 and it was extended to 2013, and in that period this 19 million happened to be an irregular.
Was the extension approved by Treasury?
National, it was approved to the then National Commissioner at the time.
And Treasury?
There was no Treasury interaction.
Why? I mean, in terms of your investigation, I would like to, what happened? Is the contract still in place now?
There is no contract, but there is a month to month to continue.
So you are still paying those people?
Yes.
7 years later?
Yes.
Does that seem right?
No, it doesn't seem right. When it was advertised the first time, we couldn't get the award through CETA, and now it is going to be advertised again.
How many times have you advertised it in the past 7 years?
It was advertised once and it came back with no meeting the BEE 80-20
framework. When was this advertisement done?
This was in 2016.
4 years ago.
Yes.
And you are only going back to the market now, and there's still a month-on-month payment.
Yes.
On a contract that has been extended, as far as I'm concerned, irregularly.
Yes, sir.
In 2013.
Yes,
so
sir.
How much are you paying per month to these people?
It's about 3.6.
3.6 million rands per month?
Yes.
All right. So what's this contract for? I see here tracking, but I don't want to venture into speculation.
It is automated vehicle location. It is when we locate the vehicles to attend to the scene of crime.
Oh, lava figure late. It's for 3.6 million rand to arrive late. Right, Commissioner, can I give you an opportunity to speak to this, and colleagues, you can come into it, but... No, Commissioner, it can't be right. 7 years on, the contract is advertised once, and it's a month-on-month now thing, 3.6 million rands. Surely, right, Commissioner, let me
this is deflating. I think it speaks to something very fundamentally wrong. Yeah, okay, let Commissioner, I'll hand over to you. You can speak to that one.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think, Chair, it's a sweeter contract. SAPS doesn't have entire authority over and control over it, but the new CEO is, we've just met and we agreed on all these outstanding contracts. But also, in our own portfolio committee on police, we've also raised the matter and proposed that I think there's two departments which are dependent, the city and public works. And then we ask for intervention and support, but I've also already spoken to the new CEO, and then he's reviewing quite a lot of processes there, including this contract. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Can we get a schedule of your CETA contracts and their status so that we can get CETA back here? Because even in the Fifth Parliament, as colleagues, you know, from the legacy report, CETA and the SEPs, there were numerous issues, so that we can then clear the woods, and so that if we need to make, we can make informed recommendations about changes. But it can't be right that you have a situation such as this. So you are transferring 3.6 million rand to CETA every month, and then CETA services this contract.
Yeah, in all the contracts between us and CETA, we pay CETA, then CETA pay the service provider.
The governor, yeah, okay. I think what colleagues, we have to have an interface with CETA in terms of their own controls and environment with their stakeholders, because at the end of the day, I would have imagined, though, let me put it this way, did SAPS flag this matter with SAPS, with CETA? And what was the response of CETA on this particular one? Because, I mean, like, it's 7 years with one advertisement 4 years ago, and then it continued, 3.6 million rands per month. Okay, so is there correspondence between you and CETA on this one? Okay, that's fine. That we will get. All right, Honorable Hadebe, and then Honorable Somya.
No,
I've noted you, CFO.
Thanks, Chair. You know, I used to, when I see SEPs, I see law and order. People who are prepared to serve and to protect. This, in front of us, speaks contrary to the perception that we have when we see you. Chair, legally, there is nothing as an extension of an expired contract. Once something expires, it ceases to exist. As such, you cannot extend it. This expired in 2010, if I heard you correctly. The date of this incident is 2012. You cannot 2 years later extend something that is not there. It is legally wrong. You are currently unfairly benefiting this individual, and you don't even know whether the price that you are paying is competitive to the market, because you have not tested it. There might be, and this is not the only service provider that can offer this service to you. I'm glad, and it's even worse, you are waiting condonation. You want to condone this. It says you are waiting, so you don't see anything wrong with this division whatsoever for you to be waiting for condonation to normalize the abnormal situation. Is that what is this all about in front of us? Is this item waiting to be normalized? Abnormal as it is. Is that what you are trying to tell us here?
Let's get a response to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. The two transactions are abnormal, and
there is no way they can be normalized. I think I must just put the awaiting condemnation into perspective. In terms of the National Treasury framework on irregular expenditure, you have to investigate, determine, take action, and finalize everything in terms of the value chain and submit for condemnation. So before you submit, you will finalize all your investigations and take action against people, recover where there's a need. You cannot submit that for condemnation. But the manner in which it is written, this status is the manner in which it's written in our register to say awaiting condemnation. But it doesn't necessarily mean that when the investigation is concluded and there's maladministration, you will submit that to Treasury. So it's not submitted for condemnation. It's abnormal. It cannot be normalized. The investigation is still ongoing. I wanted also to submit that the 475 is also undergoing a forensic investigation. We submitted it for forensic investigation. We are not normalizing the wrong things, Honorable Mem. This is just the status as it was written on the annual report. We have not submitted anything for condemnation. Remember, in terms of the framework, we must do the entire value chain. You must assess, confirm if it is irregular, who was liable, was there corruption, was there fraud, disciplinary, the entire value chain. And then when you are done, you then assess to say, do I submit to Treasury for condemnation? These things are not submitted for condemnation.
But what I would then is written here seeks to suggest that you have concluded and that you have submitted and you are waiting now for Treasury to...
No, that is not the case, Chair. I wanted just to put
Then let's Lungisa that one.
Okay.
We apologize for the language, Chair. We'll correct.
Because the impression I had reading this was that you'd submitted and a decision was awaited. All right, that will be updated in the schedule. Rather say, under investigation, and indicate that going for advertising and so on, let's be specific. So that, I think we'll also need to make determination about time frames on these things. Right, Honorable Somya?
Thanks, Chair. I think one part of my question has been solved on the question of the condemnation. The point that have been emphasized. The second point for me was going to say it looks like there's a trend on CETA contracts, and that trend even weighs heavily on the fiscus as provided to yourselves on very critical matters on your operations. You'd look into all those kinds of contracts which involve CETA. They somewhat, if you look into the context of those, the quality, the value, the substance of it, the benefit overall, and added to that now, the financial burden, which leads your department, Commissioner, to get deeper into irregularities. You see, which might necessitate some form of a very urgent focus on such kind of contracts. Because now you're telling us that you're still continuing on something which is irregular, on something which is illegal because there's no existence of contract. You're still paying on such. You honor such payments. You see, and that really weighs heavily on your own credence. I would really want to urge you to act differently on that level, observing your protocols, but at the same time, looking into how these things are getting deeper in the sense of castrating your ability to deal with matters which are substantive on your operational ability. And then the last factor, Chair, which I think it was dealt with by honourable member Schwartz earlier on, this thing of while the finalization of a need to contract to certain companies, individuals, you immediately change the specs to suit such individuals. The AG speaks on those instances where certain companies don't meet the requirements because they don't meet such requirements. Those who are involved, they quickly work out differing terms to suit them, and then that puts some kind of course even deeper on irregularities and criminality for that matter, because it's not only irregular, it's a criminal act, that somewhat happens. And it is known who does it, it is known that what he has done is illegal, but there is still some kind of a drag in as far as investigating such is concerned. So I'm asking this differently to what the previous member was somewhat very harsh on it. I'm trying to be softer, but it's a very harsh environment. At least some kind of a bearing into dealing with that matter is very necessary for us as a committee. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Commissioner?
Yeah, Chair. I think firstly, we would like to appreciate the approach of the committee on the CETA matter. I think there's bigger challenges than this. We would not necessarily relate on all the challenges. But we firstly wrote to our minister, we asked our minister to intervene with the minister of CETA. It again is on the two departments and public works. Because what you will not believe, since I started office, I don't have a headquarters. I'm squatting. Yes, and I paid millions. Yeah, I'm just saying it. So,
but why are you squatting, Commissioner? Because now, then we are also squatting on that comment if we don't have it. Why are the SAP squatting in terms of headquarters? And for how long have you been squatting and how much are you paying? Well, I think that's the nub of the issue. Who are you paying? Who's the beneficiary of this abnormality, SAP squatting?
The advantage of this, which I can rely on, is that the Minister of Public Works has intervened with our minister. But I had to vacate the headquarters because it's not ready to be occupied. But yet we have paid money. But the minister is resolving that. So I'm operating from an office of a divisional commissioner. We've raised this, but we also raised it with our portfolio committee to say we've got challenges with the CETA Act. But then again, Chair, it's more or less like the same principle I've explained earlier, that there's certain SAPs operations which doesn't fit with certain policy direction. Like, for instance, the CETA Act says we must work through CETA, we must acquire technology. But CETA doesn't have policy in background. If criminals changes the modus operandi tomorrow, we need new technology. Only us will be understanding that particular technology. CETA won't understand. They don't have the background. But we must do it via CETA. But there's also agency in some of these things. Yeah. So those are other matters that we've raised. But the ministers have intervened, our portfolio committee on police has intervened, but we also then asking for the support of this committee so that this matter is then resolved in a manner that it can enable us to do policing. At the present moment, it handicaps policing because we must modernize policing and there's big challenges. So we, the new CEO and myself, we have engaged Honorable Chair. We are also trying to resolve this matter. The other matter raised by the Honorable Member, I also want to agree that's criminal conduct. And we will deal with it as such. But it is also part and parcel of the controls that we're putting in place so that we prevent it from happening at all costs. Thank you, Chair.
If you, Commissioner, I'll come back to that issue. Because if you say you would like our support, I think we need the full details of the squatting arrangement. So I'll come back to that, I think, before we go. Right, Honourable Member, you will forgive me.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Honorable Shembeni. I'm sitting in the Portfolio Committee on Police.
Okay. All right. Honorable Shembeni, over to you.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, my biggest worry here is I want to check on the appointments of these heads of those departments. The HODs, how are they appointed? Because I think that's where we must start. And another thing, are they on contract or permanent basis? These people being appointed on those positions where we find that we are having a problem, like in the supply chain issues. Are they being interviewed as to check as to their qualifications and everything? I just want to quickly find out there.
Right. The new head of supply chain starting on the 1st of April, what was the process for?
Exactly, that's what I'm looking at. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's just the process that has been followed recently. The post has been advertised, and then candidates were afforded the opportunity to apply. Then an evaluation committee was appointed, also concurred to by the minister. Then the evaluation committee starts with a shortlisting process, going through the applications and looking at the CVs. And after all, candidates are called to a formal assessment process. The interview process in SAPS is done through an assessment center, which is a practical evaluation process. And after all, then the panel will then arrive at the best candidate for the post. So that's what we have done up to this far. And we're just waiting now to confirm. On the contracts, Chair, only the National Commissioner and Provincial Commissioners are appointed on contract. But divisional commissioners like this one of Supply Chain and other divisional commissioners and even Deputy National Commissioners, they're not on contract. It's more of a permanent post. Thank you, Chair.
Right. Honorable Shembeni.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm a bit satisfied, but sometimes disappointed, because why I was asking this question is that I know of generals that are being appointed without being interviewed. They did not make any applications, no posts were advertised, people were just appointed out of the blue, and I think that's the other part that gives us problem with the SAPS.
All right, maybe what you can do is to provide a schedule of those generals you refer to, and then we will get the SAPS to give a detailed response to each of their appointments. Because Ogunyange should promote a general. Other things are promotional, so we'll have to determine whether you're speaking about appointments to positions or is it upward mobility of the ranks. So I think those determinations, but once we get that list that you have, we'll submit it to SAPS, and they will provide a written response on each one. I think we can tie it down in that logical way. I think that is fine. Are you comfortable with that?
Thank you, Chairperson.
The thing is, I don't have to speak in general strokes, in broad strokes. I'd like to be very specific.
That's why I was asking. The general is fully aware of what I'm asking.
Yeah, but Honorable Shemben, you appreciate
Thank
that.
You very much.
We here are not, you see. So those are portfolio committee things. So if we raise them here for us, we'll have to devise a process. So we, you see, I'm taking it from a pure perspective of principle and approach.
Okay,
unless, but then you are at liberty, remember, to flag the names now, and the commissioner will respond. That's fine. So you can, you are at liberty, you've got the floor, so you can name that General Hlengwa was appointed.
There were appointments, I think, that were made by General Pashani. The commissioner is our, you see, notes, they say. Those appointments were generals were appointed to, I mean, those high ranks. And then I think I've got a concern about that. Because this, when we talk about a general, we're talking about a director on that level. Now, I'm just checking that, is it possible in such a department to have people in those positions that are being there without being interviewed, no applications being made, just I just come here, a chairperson, and say, you are appointed, you are a general today, we are there, you are a general today. What criteria was being made or what so I followed? That's what I was just asking.
Right,
thank you very much.
Commissioner, appointments made before by the former acting national commissioner, what was the situation then? That's the specificity I was speaking about, so that we know exactly what space are we talking about. All right, Smolanyana.
Yeah, yeah. But before that, as a matter of principle, yes, I think your approach was even much better. That while we are dealing with those matters of friends and sense, it's good to know where they are flowing from. But in terms of the detail and specificity, we would be in a better standing to say there's this which happened and so forth and so forth. So your lenience in this regard is somewhat now oversteps your earlier intervention, which I think was much more properly useful for us all to be somewhat in the equal footing in as far as that is concerned.
Okay. Now, what I was saying was that the commissioner can give us an explanation as to whether these realities prevailed, and then we will get the submission of the names, and then specifically on each one, we can be told, right, to go to where is General Somio, where is General Lis, and so on, and how they were appointed. But I think as an overview, right? So, Commissioner, over to you. All right, okay, let's...
Thank you. thank you, Honorable Chair. No, Chair, it's more a question of law. There is Regulation 45. And Regulation 45 provide for the National Commissioner in consultation with the Minister to appoint or promote without advertising a post. And that regulation is there. But then it also then depends on the situation. When I interacted with our portfolio committee on police, there was a suggestion by the committee that we then put limitations on the application of these regulations. We rather advertise more posts. That's why at the present moment we're not utilizing that particular regulation. But it's there, it's provided for. If I have to use it, I'll consult with the minister. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think it's not... This general rank is not without precedence. We've had non-career police people becoming national commissioners. with no background at all, and don't know whether they can even shoot a gun or even chase the criminal. And so that has happened, and also they have. Yeah. So there was a time when the spokesperson of the SEPs was promoted to the general position. She came from KZN, and she was I know her first name. I forget her surname. General Nonkulego Mbata. Yes, she was the provincial spokesperson, and the next thing she was a general. So that has happened. It's not without precedence, and I think that the measures being put in place to curb it are good, because otherwise we run the risk of demoralizing upward mobility within the ranks of the SEPs. I think that is very, very important, because we must not. I think the provision, whilst is there, should not be a norm in its utilization. It must be an exception. So I think let us look at that. So, but I still maintain that if Honorable Shemini wants specific details about those people and where they are, the SEPs will provide those and what they are doing. Right? So are we good on that? Right, Honorable colleagues, we still have three focus areas. Yes, sanity. And General Vuma must still come back with the timelines. Legal must still come back. So I think we probably are not going to complete our work for today. We will, yes. Oh, General Vuma's read, right, Jengel?
Thank you, Chair.
Then Legal will come in after. I think they are ready. Legal, are you ready? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to General Lalda, there are 8 matters that she has been investigated on. And as we speak, I know the trial has started. There is a matter which was initiated on the 3rd of June 2019. There is 4 cases that were initiated on the 19th of June last year. There is 1 matter that was initiated on the 5th of August last year. There is a matter that was also initiated on the 5th of November last year. The last one was on the 3rd of June. It's 2 on the 3rd of June. So I know there is a provincial commissioner that is presiding on these matters. The trial is continuing this week.
But she's at work. I think that was the issue. The nub of it was now Mark Kesau 8 to 7 Kabugwa Koko.
She is at work, because most of these matters of irregular expenditures, because they involve a lot of members, were not suspended.
Can I request, when we get back, we'll need a specific report on all the landlord matters to check whether, even if it's not suspended, that she still warrants to be in the environment.
I think that's the issue. If you're saying that the matter's on trial this week, but she's at work, I think that is what is causing. Because you see, Commissioner, one of the things is, even from a perception point of view, you create an environment of animal farm, that all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, because it begs the question, what influence does this person yield in the organization, would Yena specifically remains at work on 8 cases? It's very, very serious. So I think, Commissioner, you can go back, look at it, and we will pronounce ourselves when we compile our report. But I think from the outset, you must leave here knowing that we certainly do not believe, without even delving into the merits and demerits of the case, but the fact that there are 8 cases, all of whom, which, if a provisional commissioner is providing them, speak to the seriousness of them. and for her to remain at work when others have been suspended raises more questions than others, because is she at work in the same position in which she held when these transgressions? So she continues to preside over the same space in which she's been charged for. I'm not sure how that's even logical. So, Commissioner, I think on that one, can we get a report within the next 7 days, just specifically on that, on the set of circumstances which have led to a continuing at work, albeit that there are 8 cases. And then as legal comes in to give an update on their matters, I think they can pronounce themselves on this matter as well. Having somebody at work, having a trial on 8 cases, they remain at work with no suspension, to get their take on this particular one. Right, so let's go to the 475 million rand contracts with Telkom. No, let me not say contract, an agreement, because we are told there's no contract. So that agreement, legal, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. National Commissioner, I want to respond as follows. We've got the information from the office. It's a 20-page document, and of course there's other documents that followed this particular document that I'm referring to. But I just want to summarize and say, Chair, that a contract was entered into between SAPS and Telkom in 2012. And yes, in 2012, it came into effect on the 14th of March 2010 and ended on the 31st of March 2013 for 36 months. Immediately thereafter and during that process, there were extensions to the contract and further solutions were provided. A third service provider comes into the picture. But, Chair, I do not want to go any further into that, but to ask that we be given an opportunity to put this entire matter in its proper perspective and submit it to SCOPA via the National Commissioner.
No, legal. No. You know why I'm saying no, I'll tell you. It's 475 million rands. It's a 2010, you should have the details now. What further perspective? Why was this not flagged? I mean, this is not our schedule. It's your schedule. I mean, this should have already been on your radar. And I tell you, I say I sample by numbers when I sample these things. Even if the 100 rand one is important, colleagues, no, even 600, it's important. But this is 475 million rands. If I had not asked it, then would... No. What's going on here? What necessitated the extensions? No, let's talk about this contract. Even if it's the last item we deal with, colleagues, but I'm not sustaining that request just yet. Right, legal?
Chair, I also want to add that this is one of those matters that is subject to investigation at this point in time.
How long has it been under investigation? Who's investigating it?
We refer to this matter for forensic investigation. The investigator, when we flagged it last year in April.
Okay, order, please, colleagues, order, please.
When we picked up this particular matter last year in April, as I indicated, two investigations unfolded. There was an investigation that was seeking to confirm the irregularity of this particular transaction. It's a complex transaction, it's an old transaction. That part was finalized, it was confirmed that indeed this is a problem, it's irregular. At the same time, we then forwarded the matter for forensic investigation. That particular matter is almost at conclusion in terms of this particular. And the accounting officer instructed that there be a contract that is dealt with in relation to this particular transaction so that we prevent perpetuating irregular expenditure. But the Major General, who is heading the forensic investigation under this contract, is in the room, Chair. But it was identified last year in April. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, who's investigating it?
Thank you, Chair. The investigation is at the final stage,
and it's due to the involvement of technicians that it was delayed. It needed a technician report to corroborate the facts contained in the report. So we are on the final stage and we'll be briefing the National Commissioner with that.
It's an internal investigation. An internal forensic investigation. All right. Timeline. I've noted the Honorable Song, Honorable Hadebe, Honorable Tolasha.
30th of April.
Right. 30th of April, the National Commissioner will be briefed, and then he will provide the details then in the monthly reporting that we are going to establish. So imagine then that that will be the 18th of May. Right, colleagues? I'm trying to compartmentalize everything into a timeline so we know exactly how we're tracking. Right. Honorable Somio?
Thanks, Chair. In addition to this, could we determine, as a follow-on, that there's a determination that the contract does not exist, and that you need the service? How far are you now, in terms of the timeline? How far are you, as required? Are you closer into the appointment in a regular way? For the acquisition of the same service, so that we close a chapter of irregularity in a way, in your own determination.
Okay.
Chair, I can report that there's engagement between the Divisional Commissioner, Supply Chain Management, CETA, as well as Telkom to take this matter forward in terms of regularizing going forward the relationship.
Sorry. See, the my language expressed it differently. You were told here that this is irregular. You were told here there's no existence of any contract. We are told here that this matter is under investigation. And we are told that you have undertaken forensic investigation. But you are still going into those who are in the provision of the similar service going forward. How do you go about around those kinds of issues in terms of a clear determination and moving away from the irregular act?
Is this one process or two processes? I think let's determine that. Is legal speaking to the same process as risk? Because if you're at final stage, but you are still entering into discussion, so can you get that clarity? Are you running two separate processes or one process?
Chair, it's two separate processes. The reason why one would be continuing to engage with Telkom is because of the very nature of the services that they provide, which CETA is trying to assist with providing so that we would go in a direction where we might not need the services of Telkom going forward. But as I've indicated, Chair, the technocrats are busy with getting down to the substance of the agreement going forward.
Agreement going forward, the contract's irregular.
Honorable Chair, let me just plead with the committee. I think firstly I said the CEO of CETA, we engage him with contracts of this nature.
Okay.
Maybe the assurance that I can give to the committee, I'm going to engage also with the CEO of CETA immediately after this and say we stop any further process which are not regular in terms of this, and that we get this matter regularized before the end of this month, or at least by the end of this month. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Considering the, we of course having due regard to risk to the establishment, I think we that is fine, that process, but the caveat is that having given due regard to risk, because we must not regularize but at the same time collapse. I think colleagues, the undertaking as a principle is welcome, and I think it clears the woods. Right, Honorable Hadebe?
Thank you, Chair. I was hoping we are going to be given the original contract value. What we are even though it's still under investigation, we are concerned about
is
the deviation of half a billion. That on its own indicates to you that the original contract is way more than that.
What was the original agreement contract value of this contract?
We are asking 5 minutes, Chair.
All right. We'll
thank you.
In 5 minutes.
But the 20-page document has just arrived.
Yeah, they are reading it in real time. They will get the response. Don't worry. They will pull it out. No stress. So, whom?
So, all along while they were investigating, Chair, they did not know how much.
We'll get the figure. Mobile report here, right? Honorable Swartz?
Chair, my one is not specifically on this, but that when they bring a report where they have corrected what they are saying was not actually what they are saying. On page 11, on item number 7, I've got an interest there where they say in their notes, the BAC granted approval for 50% upfront payment. However, 100% was paid upfront.
Item 8, 2018,
yes.
Referral to the Durban ICC.
I just want, when they give us this, they must just explain to us that if the BAC has approved 50% upfront payment, it means there are documents, there are people who have signed to approve the 50%. How then does it get to the payment part and the person pays 100%? Who would have instructed that official that when Amanje, so koka gonke, because the official would have gotten a file that has got attachments and resolutions of the BAC, so that we just get to understand how do you arrive at all this, and also that all these brigadiers and Colonel Mtombeni and the rest, since 2018 and this issue, are they still at work? Your comment says that there's a disciplinary process. You are saying you are waiting condonation, condoning what, la? Because ikala lisobala, somebody paid a full amount instead of what was approved by the BAC.
Okay, let's do this. We'll want a report on that transaction. I had also actually flagged that one as well, for the simple reason that, colleagues, Telkom is partially state-owned as it is. The Durban ICC is a municipal entity in Durban, and this is state-to-state, government-to-government departments irregularity. And that on its own is the clearest indication of looting within the system and the cycle of governance. You know, because ICC is a municipal entity at Egwene. And for them to have, they themselves, to receive payment, knowing full well that they shouldn't and not flag it, speaks to the financial health and financial integrity of their process. So I had flagged that particular one. All right. There is a, all right, audit wants to make a comment.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I need to express myself, otherwise the CFO is going to call my trip down to Cape Town irregular expenditure. So thank you very much for the invite that I received from the committee as chair of the audit committee. And may I just please allow me just to say a few, or make a few comments in terms of what I've been witnessing and hearing from the committee. And I'm very encouraged by the questions that have been asked. Some of them have already been asked by the audit committee prior to this meeting. So can I give the committee the assurance that we're basically on the same page when it comes to comments regarding irregular expenditure? And I'm going to refer the committee to specifically to the audit committee's comments or report that was published in the annual report of the department. And we mentioned specifically, and I'm just going to mention one or two sentences. We say that the control measures within the department is not effective to prevent and detect instances of non-compliance. And we specifically refer to non-compliance. And having said that, I want to also confirm that we as the audit committee, in terms of our audit committee charter, we coordinate the audits of AG, but very important also the internal audit. And I've got a representative here from the internal audit, and I want to state categorically that it's not only the AGSA that has reported on irregular expenditure. The internal audit, in terms of their compliance auditing, have referred to quite a few cases as well.
Okay.
So we from the audit committee make it very clear to the department, and the accounting officer can vouch for that. When we speak to him on accounting matters, mainly around internal audit matters, we always bring in the internal audit, because that's actually a preview for the AG to determine exactly what are the cases that need to be looked at.
Now, but are you satisfied with the responses of management to the issues you are raising?
I'm quite happy, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Can I just then, on one issue, and it was raised by one of the honourable members, was that there's a difference of opinion with the AG. Now, I can assure the committee that when we go into our audit committee meetings, we normally facilitate the Auditor General, and it's always a case to have both comments from management and from the AG. And in this regard, when one looks at irregular expenditure, there's two matters related to irregular expenditure. One, once the AG has reflected on a finding that affects irregular expenditure, it is normally accepted by management, and they report on it as possible irregular expenditure. That's the norm that we allow to be enforced. Once it's reported as a possible irregularity, then starts the investigations by the department to determine what was the reasons, what was the background, and then we normally get feedback as to what is the case in terms of that. Once it's confirmed as irregular expenditure, it must be mentioned in the annual report as such. Now, in terms of what happened since 2016-17, everyone is clear, and the department has admitted to it, that there were not proper controls to identify and investigate compliance to the normal treasury regulations. And in that process, when an honourable member that is on from the public, from the BCOP, will remember that in September last year, there was quite a detailed plan that was presented by the department in terms of actions that was going to be implemented. We follow up on those actions, and we hold the department accountable in terms of the progress. And one, unfortunately, the committee was not briefed on slide number 21. Perhaps can be done at the next meeting. But we from the audit committee is quite happy that the high-level intervention that was initiated by the department would regulate the follow-up of irregular expenditure. And we will have it on our agenda as a fixed item, and we hold the department accountable to report back on the progress. The one specific one that we are encouraged by is the fact that there's continuous training taking place within the department. And I want to hold up this little pocketbook. It was published, I think, 2 months ago, which every section within the department that deals with procurement will have readily available. Hopefully, this will prevent further irregular expenditure. We were quite encouraged by that, and I think it's possibly that it should also be circulated to the committee for reference. But other than that, Chair, I've got still a couple of things to mention, but I will at this stage just like to ensure the committee that from an audit committee perspective, we are definitely monitoring the process and the progress of the department. And I must once more congratulate the committee. I think it's a noble step to invite the chairs of the audit committees as well to bring them up to date in terms of what's happening at SCOPA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We've 5 minutes for the value of the original contract. We thank the audit committee and their input.
We're ready, Chair.
All right.
Chamber Nelson.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. There are two elements to this particular contract there. I just want to go back to the amount. In total, it comes to 832.3 million, Chairperson, but please allow me just to qualify the two. Remember the Telkom data line service has been in place.
Pardon, 832 million.
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay.
The arrangement between Telkom and departments were formalized by the National Treasury, and that is in existence for some 30 years ago. So then, based on that premise, the one was the, and they called the wide area network, the WAN. Part of this agreement, and that amounts to the 496.5 million Chairperson. When they commenced with this procurement process, it was anticipated to run over a period of 60 months. So the one part is the WAN amount, part, is the WAN part 335.7 million Rand and 496.5 million for the telecom monitoring solution, and that was where there was a service level agreement concluded then between the department and telecom in this regard. We have a report on this particular matter, Chairperson, setting out the chronological sequence of events in terms of this matter, how it unfolded, the involvement of the IJS board at the time with the chairperson in terms of signing on behalf of the cluster particular agreement for this particular service, the involvement of CETA. They call it the Telkom ICT smart solution. So essentially, the current full value of these two agreements amounts to 832.2 million rand.
So that's the original value.
That's.
And the 400 and is the deviation. The total then becomes 1.2, 1.3 billion for this whole telecom. Not it. All right, so the 492 is included in the 832.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
No problem.
Yes.
All right, so what, that was the 335. I think the confusion...
I'm asking this question deliberately because National Treasury prohibits a contract extension that exceeds 20% of the original contract value. So I need to get an understanding. What was the original contract value?
Right.
That warrants you to exceed more than
20%. I'm wanting to provide the answer.
Chair, this specific contract of this specific irregular expenditure, the reason is not extension. It's not an extension. The reason is the manner in which its whole range of problems that talks to this, how this whole thing was concluded. There are SLAs, as he was explaining. So there's a whole range of, hence we subjected it to forensic, of irregularities. It's not solely extension. There are a range of problems surrounding this particular transaction. However, therefore,
because earlier on the, it was that there was a contract, it expired, and then there was the 409. So Honorable Hadebe's question is, the one that expired, what was its value? I think that is, unless you are clarifying and rescinding that to say you move from zero to 496.
Is she saying, they're saying 30 years ago, huh?
Yeah.
30 years ago.
I'm going to tie down on this one, because we are awaiting a report of the investigation, and then we will read that report on the basis of the documentation that will be provided. So because we're going to end up now conducting the investigation here, so I'm suppressing on this one, and we will note that you've not received your response. Because obviously there are many layers and issues to this thing. It's like we are peeling an onion, and when you peel an onion, you cry. So as we peel, there are more problems than we are crying now. Yeah. All right. So, Commissioner,
I must state is that I think the department is economical with the truth. They know the information, but for some strange reason, they are refusing to give it to us. They are being economical with the truth. Because here it says existing contract / extension of contract. Yet the CFO is saying it's not an extension. But on your comment, you're saying it's an extension of contract.
That is what appears in the notes.
Yes, sir.
And what I don't understand, your status and your progress, you want to condone this. Awaiting condemnation again.
The awaiting condemnation has been retracted.
To the previous one, not to this one.
No.
That was the previous one.
No, I've retracted it on the whole thing. So I said to the department, open up the document and bring up one which is updated. Because that term...
But whoever compiled this document, he based his information on something. It did not thumbsuck the terminology used. It is in relation to whatever progress report that whoever complied with.
But now we have determined that particular categorization, as far as we are concerned, is not correct, and we are not accepting it, and it will be corrected. So we've corrected that one. I'm in agreement with you, but we here have corrected it. That's not it. Right, can I just take Honorable Swartz and then we'll tie it down on this colleague.
Chair, I think this Telkom issue is a very serious matter, and if it was possible, they were supposed to come back, this department, together with Treasury, because when you listen to them, they are bringing up issues of 30 years and a whole lot of things, and... in their report, they must also specify up until when they paid Telkom, after the 2010,
I think we can 2013 period. Saying Telkom? Yeah, they are, and the commissioner has said they will go and regularize that. So they are still paying.
Yeah, so that is what I'm saying, Chair, so that we just get clarity. Maybe when Treasury is here and they are here, because the 30 years and everything, because there's some confusion somewhere. Either the department does not follow its own internal controls to the latter, that makes it to comply with the AG, or else kukhona umuntu on Telkom, except something is not okay, Chair.
All right, maybe let's follow up on that. Has an assessment been done of those involved in this contract with relations to Telkom? Any links?
Thank you, Chair. An investigation to confirm that indeed it is irregular, it was done. The recommendation from the investigation was then to do a further assessment on the links of, on who actually created this irregular expenditure. So that is the one that is not yet concluded. And I also wanted honourable member to correct, to say over and above what is written here, there are further problems. I did not disagree that we have written that there is an extension. There is over and above other problems. That is why we referred it to performance. It's a complex transaction. And the further determination in terms of dealing with this will require an expect in terms of dealing with disciplinary. So that is the process that we are currently dealing with. It's a very complex transaction.
It's
an old transaction and it's complex.
Thanks. Okay. Chair, can I request that we follow the direction, we submit a report?
No, we will receive the report on this transaction, because Commissioner Manning, my transactions on this schedule that we could drill into. I mean, I had flagged all of them. But because I'm also trying to be cognizant about time, and we have still not touched on contracts, the other section on contracts, there's a lot on consequence management, internal controls, the deviations and expansions. So what we will do is, colleagues, we will tie it down there for today. I think we must not bite more than we can chew, because the Ntozaka steps are very complex. Because just one thing, Commissioner, you see, on this sheet, I think this one is of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You know, IT must come in here. Honestly speaking, your license fees, they're like a contract. You know, your disk has expired. If my disk has expired, this police stop me on the road, I get a fine. So what you fine me for, you should be able to manage yourselves in your own systems to do correctly. License fees are an issue here. But there is one particular transaction that I want to flag with you, Commissioner, on the fruitless and the wasteful. Colleagues, it's on page 9. I numbered my pages. To the value of 269 million rands with CETA. And I flag that because CETA keeps coming up. It's on this schedule, this one, the one of fruitless and wasteful. I numbered the pages. It's item 7679092, 2018, August 31. The CETA matter is under investigation, 270 million rand. I don't think we are on the... So can you see, I flagged that the number of CETA issues before us are quite extensive. So, colleagues, we will suspend the hearing for today. And when matters of coronavirus are stabilized and normalized, and Parliament has given a direction in terms of how we proceed, we will then make a determination. The whippery met this morning. I think, in fact, they are still locked in that meeting, to develop the modus operandi for Parliament, and we, the chairs of committees, have been called to a meeting at 1, in fact, ourselves, so that we know how to proceed with the work of committees. Commissioner, the questions we ask arise out of the fact that we remain fundamentally concerned, particularly about the historic realities of corruption and maladministration within the establishment. And our probing does not in any way seek to water down your efforts. Where you are doing good work, rest assured of our full support. But what we want, Commissioner, is urgency and being committed to your own commitments and successful prosecution so that we convert blue to orange in terms of outfit. We must not normalize a situation whereby people loot and then hide behind the pretext of resignations and on one hand, and on the other hand, disciplinary processes and consequence management processes which are prolonged and then expire, and then people have got a leg to stand on a technicality, and the fundamental issues of their corruption falls by the wayside. So it is our full expectation that the SAPS must actively demonstrate that you are able to investigate within time, prosecute within time, so that we clean up the establishment. So we as public accounts need public confidence to be demonstrated by the people who wield the acts of consequence. So that report that we'll receive, Commissioner, must tell us Uguti Spanban has been dismissed. We want recoveries of state money. And so it becomes very, very important that you do the right thing. So we've noted in your comments that there are things that you are doing, and I don't think any of us here fault them. They are correct, because they are part of the corrective interventions which are required, because, colleagues, the SAPS bottom line is, for the longest of time, were left to their own devices, and they are rotten to the core. We have sat in this venue with individuals who looked at us straight in the face and lied through their teeth, only to find that as they left the room some few days later, they were charged, they were arrested, and all sorts of things, but sat here and gave us assurance. Let's not have a case of deja vu. So, Commissioner, what I always say to everyone, the support we give to any institution and to any accounting officer is conditional. It's not support in a vacuum. It's not support of a blank check. But I think the interventions are good. Continue on adding this irregular expenditure, probe into it, so that you can have consequences. I think that is very, very important. On any other matter, we will be in constant communication. I'm in full agreement with you, Honorable Hadebe. I don't think you have answered us to our satisfaction on the Telkom contract. So we will look at the report that you will provide and assess it and then probe further. The questions about the generals, colleagues, should it not work out for you in Parliament, the Commissioner may maybe then appoint you as a general. But constable. So, colleagues, Commissioners, have said there are quite a number of areas we have not touched on insofar as your 2018-19 report is concerned, your immovable assets. We still would want a report on the squatting reality, which is before you. It's not acceptable. Whatever the interventions are, they are good, but we need to go to root cause, because as far as we are concerned, there needs to be consequence management insofar as that reality is concerned. It can't be squatting without, and then when corrected, the corrective measures, maybe we put it this way, should be accompanied by consequence management. So, Commissioner, I will hand over to you for concluding remarks, if you have any, and then we will, right, Commissioner?
Honorable Chair, from our side and on behalf of the organization, we would like to express our appreciation, firstly, for the guidance and direction that we've got from the committee, but secondly, for holding us accountable to make sure that there's effective policing in the country. We do not see see this as personal or otherwise. We see it as a valuable contribution to policing. Because if we do everything that is being pointed out by the committee, policing will be effective in the country. We also further commit to provide all the answers and the reports which the committee has directed that we should. And we're looking forward in future to come back and give a full account of the remaining issues. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Commissioner. Colleagues, we will schedule a separate meeting on SEPs and CETA contracts because there's quite a lot of them. In the meantime, Commissioner, I would request that you also maybe give us a position paper of your assessment as the institution affected in terms of what are the prevailing challenges so that we will consider that as well and make informed recommendations. Working with the portfolio committee on police so that we tie this matter, and it's an old matter, we need to bring it to a logical legal conclusion. Colleagues, if there's anything affecting committees, I will communicate it to you once we have completed the meeting which we are now being called to of the chairs, and then we'll communicate in terms of the way forward. Let us continue exercising vigilance in this corona thing. Commissioner, just one thing on a policing aspect. Somebody sent a WhatsApp thing, and I think it's important. Heightened public education around chances. People going to households now saying they are coronavirus testers and then actually looting. So I think we are encouraging you as well to do your part of ensuring public safety from people who are actually now chanting. So colleagues, be safe, and we will see each other tomorrow. Having said that, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.